welcome to episode 2 of season 2 on my podcast, Diamond Insights, and I'm your host, Daniela Starr. So this month is Mental Health Month worldwide. We celebrate mental health on the 10th of October, and so everything and anything around this month is more centered around promoting sustainable mental health. So in this podcast, I am going to be talking to you about loss and grief, and I'm going to be sharing three types of losses that I've experienced and how that felt like in real time at the time that I was actually experiencing that. So stay tuned. Loss is such a powerful experience, I think a powerful emotion that we go through. Personally, I have never gone through grief or experienced grief and have not come out a different person. I think any time that I've experienced grief in my life, something about me has changed, literally. Like I mentioned earlier on, I want to discuss three types of losses that I have experienced. And really, I have experienced different types of them. But in this podcast specifically, I just want to highlight these three kinds of losses, because I feel like to date, I still grieve for those losses. So the first loss, and really one that I suffered so immensely and so deeply, is the loss of my mother years back. So I nursed my mom for about 4 to 5 years. So she had cancer. And to date, I don't think that there's anything that would have prepared me for her passing. Even when I saw her in pain, even when we were admitted in hospital, you know, even the times when she'd confide in me or my sister or my brother that she's really tired and she just wants to rest, none of that ever prepared me. I remember when she was very, very ill this time around, and we were at the hospital. I didn't know. At least neither myself nor my sister knew that the doctors had actually written off her case and just said, you know, just make comfortable until she passes away. So I had no idea that was in her file. My sister had no idea that was in her file. So at some point, you know, doctors would just pass by her bed and they would read what is in the file. And then, you know, they'll just say a few polite words and then they would go away. And those, I complained to a certain doctor. He looked at the file and then he requested that we run some tests, which, because I was by the bedside, I ran around and we did those tests and the results were out. And at that point, I was complaining about, why isn't anybody actually reading these results and making a decision? You know, if you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, I'd rather you allow us to take our mother home. And I remember I was saying this to a senior doctor. I think it was almost visiting hour, and he was just looking at me like, I am so sorry that no one has had a chance to talk to you, but we're doing everything that we can. And he walked out. In the days that followed, and by days really it's just like in the next 2 or maybe at most 3 days, you know, her condition was deteriorating. And at that time, I was just getting ready to go back to work from maternity leave. So my boss had just arrived in the country and, you know, he wanted to touch base. How are we going to do this transitioning back into work? There's some issues that he wanted to hand over to me because he was handling some of the things that I normally handle. And, you know, the office had moved and there were all these other issues that he just wanted to touch base with me on, because the following week I was scheduled to report for work. So I have a mother who's heavily ill critically ill in the hospital. But then there's also, the work issue that is calling me, because at that time my boss was in and out of the country, so I was trying to maximize his presence around and just try and get some things out of the way, so that if I do go back to work and he has to fly out of the country, I'm well up to breath, up to date with everything that I'm supposed to be handing over and, just jumping into. And I'm looking at this woman. It's in the afternoon now. I'm done with all my meetings and I go to the hospital. And I'm looking at this woman. She's really, really sick. And my young brother is calling me to the side and telling me, "Mom is saying that we need to, order some things for sale at the farm." And I'm looking at him and I'm looking at her and I'm looking at him. And then I glance back at her and I'm saying, does it make sense to you for you to be doing what she's telling you to be doing right now, when you look at like her condition right now? We're supposed to be focusing on what's happening here and not what's happening at the farm, or what's going to happen at the farm, or what needs to happen at the farm. And by the time that a doctor passes through, it's evening now. It's almost visiting hours almost coming to an end, and I really, really insist that somebody needs to look at the file. Somebody needs to tell us what is going on, because at this point, these people are not doing as much as they are supposed to be doing to save our mother. And my aunt goes to I think the nurse's desk or whatever they call it. And she comes back and she says, "This is what is in the file. This is what is written in the file. That's why they've been just giving her painkillers." And if you've nursed a person really in UTH, even just getting somebody to administer a painkiller, or even just put up a drip, or connect the oxygen, it's a hassle. And I'm thinking, this can't be it. And my mind goes back to, months ago, because that was like March. And I remember in November, she had gone to the hospital and apparently they had told her that the cancer had reoccurred. And I swear to God, she never mentioned any of that. The only thing I remember is her, coming back from the doctors and saying she had to travel to the farm to put things in order. And I'm thinking, what do you mean? What did the doctors say? And she said, they say that I only have a few months to live. And I said, that's a lot of boo. Let's get a second opinion. And she was just so reluctant. So reluctant. Like, let's get a second opinion. Let's hear what other doctors have to say about this before we can write it off. And I'm thinking, I'm tired today. I've just been running up and down, in this meeting, in that meeting, looking at documentation, typing this and that, just getting my hand over in order. But then the following day, really, I was literally off and I was thinking to myself, I'm going to, spend the day with my mom. And in the night, I'm not sure what time that was. It was like maybe 23. I receive a call from my aunt and she tells me, "Your mother has just passed." I have never felt so numb. I just felt everything in me, it just froze. Like, I couldn't process, I couldn't think. I didn't know whether I should be crying at that point. I just sat on the edge of my bed and I was thinking, what did I just hear? And my husband was looking at me like, "Who's calling you?" I said, it's my aunt. Mom just passed. And he says, so what's the next move? And I'm like, I don't know. And at that point, I crawl back into bed and I get my baby, because my last born at that point was just like 3 months old. And I remember just squeezing her, wrapping my arms around her, because I knew that at the break of dawn, my life would never ever be the same again. Like, I didn't even know how it was going to change. I just knew I'm fucked. For the next couple of months, it's going to be a whole lot of a roller coaster. And I just felt like, Lord, I don't even know where I'm going to start from. And we got there, and I think everything at that point didn't feel real to me. I was looking at my sister. I'm like, I don't know what I was supposed to be doing at this point, you know. And we didn't quite much have like people who were, you know, in the forefront trying to organize this and organize that. Of course, we had people at the funeral home and just preparing for everyone who's going to come, the meals, the what, but nobody was really taking the lead in terms of, okay, we need to actually bury this person. We need to be thinking about the burial payment. We need to be thinking about the coffin. We need to be thinking about, you know, all these other things. And it just literally fell in our laps, me and my sister, and we had our spouses to help, and the running around just started. And I remember some of the church ladies and some of my friends passing through the, you know, the funeral home, and I just wasn't there because we were up and about. And remember, I have a 3-month-old baby, so at some point I need to be rushing back home to go and breastfeed and just figure, you know, things out. So the entire procession, I'm just not present. I'm numb. It's like I just got invited to organize somebody's funeral, you know, somebody distant. It wasn't my mom's funeral that I was organizing. I was just, at that point, I was just giving it my best. Like, we need to bury this person. We need to give this person a dignified, you know, send off and things like that. And I remember when we had the final meeting and they were saying, you know, we need people to go to the people who are preparing the body, you know, you need to go and see what they're doing and blah, 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 blah. And without a thought, I just said, you know, I'll go. And the following morning, we got up, I picked up my aunt, and we went. And I was looking at my mother's lifeless body being washed in front of me, being prepared. And I was feeling absolutely nothing. Like, there was just nothing there. No emotion. No nothing. And I wasn't even worried that I wasn't feeling anything at that point. I just wanted everything to be perfect. I remember there was something that they were doing on her face after they dressed her up, and they were doing some makeups and what. And there was something about the way they did the lipstick. I said, no, she wouldn't like it like this. Just try to, you know, smudge it a little bit here and try and... And after that, it was like, oh, okay. We need to drive back. The body needs to be transferred to the church. And we're in church. And, you know, body viewing was just like, oh, yeah, I saw you earlier. Okay, the makeup looks good. And it was at the point that they were closing the coffin that I felt a rush of emotions just overwhelm me. Like, I'm never gonna see this person. Like, I just wanted to be able to just hug her. I didn't even have words like to say. I don't know. It's just something that I wanted. It's like that final closure, like. And it was just, and at that point, I think that's when it really dawned on me, like, she's never coming back. She's really, really never coming back. I'll never get a chance to see her again. I'll never get a chance to laugh with her again. I'll never get a chance to complain to her or about her. Everything just, in that moment, everything just felt so real. Like, so surreal. Like, everything that was happening over the past few days just culminated into that moment. And I think I felt helpless because I didn't even know how to say goodbye. And partly here's the reason why. You know, my mom has been, well, she used to, not has been, oh, she's late. You know, my mom was sick for quite some time. And even cancer wasn't like the first real threat, you know, like real death experience that we experienced. with her. She had been sick for some time, you know, she was in and out of the hospital, and would always laugh, like, she, you know, she has like 9 lives, like a cat. And I just never expected that that was going to be the final thing. And a part of me, even when I was doing all that, I just felt so, so angry. I felt so angry. And the days that just followed, I asked my boss if I could just take another week or so to just wrap everything up now that we had buried her. And really, I just wanted to figure out what life was really going to be like without her. And I remember lying in bed, and I was just, everything just felt so dark. You know, like, even when the lights were on, and if you know me, I love lights. Like, we could be sitting, it's during the day, I'll just go and switch on the light or something. I'm that kind of person. So everything literally felt dark. No matter how much light I would have in a room, it just felt like I was just surrounded with darkness. The hopelessness that I felt, it felt like I was falling in a dark, bottomless pit. And I remember every time that I would look at my baby, I'm like, I just want to feel better. Because I have an infant, like, I need to be supporting this child. Like, I didn't have it in me. My emotions were just, they were absent. I couldn't feel anything for anyone at that point. So I decided I'm gonna seek counseling from church. And I remember sitting in front of, across my counselor, and we spoke for a while, and, you know, she was asking me questions. If you've been to counseling before, you know they ask a lot of questions. And at that point, it just felt like, I don't have the answers to the questions that you're asking me. I just want you to fix me. I want to feel better. I want to go back home and start figuring things out. You know, life after losing such an important aspect, or an important person in my life. What do I do? Where do I find the support? Everything just felt so blank, bloated. I don't even know how I can explain it, but it just felt like it was absent. You know, like when you're watching those movies and those, like, a tornado or those, like, a terrible, terrible disaster that happened, and now they're just like two or three survivors, and everything just looks absolutely hopeless, is how I was feeling at that point. Like, I didn't know what was I supposed to be doing. And even as we were navigating what was going on in my head with my counselor, she was, you sound angry. Why do you sound angry? What's making you this upset? You know, and I just said, with so many times when she said goodbye and she didn't die, I was supposed to be with her the following day. That was supposed to be her saying goodbye to me, and she just couldn't wait. She couldn't wait for me to be with me. And I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about that, because I think that's the part that felt the hardest to process, because there were just other things that were happening. And it was really, really hard. It was so hard. Like, my counselor kept saying, you know what, you need to decide to grieve. You need to give yourself time to grieve, but also You can't grieve forever. So you need to give yourself a timeline on how you're going to grieve, and at what point you will need to stop and pick up. Like you have said, you have kids, you have a family, you have work to get back to, you have all these other things that are happening right now, even as you are in this trance where you don't feel like you're connected to any of the things that are around you. You don't feel connected to your children. You don't feel connected to your spouse. You don't feel connected to your siblings. You don't feel connected to your friends. Like, I felt like I wanted people's support, but I didn't want them around me. I don't know at that point what I wanted. And that loss was so tragic for me, because I remember when I was applying for my scholarship with the government, and the social worker was asking me, what's your greatest fear? What's your biggest fear in life? And without even thinking about it, I just said, losing my mom. And she said that's as honest as it gets. I'm like, she's been everything. She's the only parent that I know. She's everything that I know from her. So, and at that point, I was young. I think I was like 16, 17 or 18 at most. It was just that. There was nothing else in this life that I was more afraid of losing than my mother. And it remained like that. Of course, other people came along and it felt like, oh, I can't live without this person, or losing this person would literally destroy me. But literally, it just felt like somebody had snatched such an important part of who I am, or that was my life. And there was just a gap there, you know, like, and there's wind blowing through and you don't know how to cover it up, because they just snatched it. It's like it's a war and somebody just, you know, put a wrecking ball, you know, in there, and it's broken. And now there's a lot of, you know, the storm is getting into the house. Like, I just felt so naked. I felt so vulnerable. Like, I have no covering. And how do I begin to become my own covering? Or where do I find covering during this space of mourning? Where do I go? It just felt like so much of me had been snatched from me, and my identity was bound to change. So who I literally told myself, I will have to become somebody else. But in the meantime, what am I supposed to be doing? So that loss was horrible. And to this day, it's been over 3 years. And to this day, I still grieve my mom. They're just days that are really, really hard. Like, they're just so hard. And you know, there are times when I tell my friends or whoever it is that I'm confiding in at that point, I say, you know, it's not that I don't know what she would say. You know, my mom and I, we used to talk a lot, and you know, she was that person. She'd just tell you things the way that they are. Sometimes, you know, she'd sugarcoat, but majority of the times mom would just say it the way it is. So majority of the times I knew exactly what she was going to say. Even now, if I'm going through something, I know partly what she would say to me. But I still want her to say it, because even if sometimes she said things as blunt as they need to be said, it just felt like she said them lovingly. You know, the intention was from a loving place. I always trusted that. I always hold on to that. And so sometimes life can just feel like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But anyway, I did say that I was going to share three. So the other one is the loss of a person that is still alive. Literally, the loss of a friendship, the loss of a relationship. Sometimes you could still be in a relationship with that person, but they have changed so much, you know. They're not the same person. That can happen to spouses, that can happen to siblings, that can happen to, you know, close friends and family. But one specific one that stood out in my life is the loss of my nanny. So I had this incredible nanny, you guys. She was like a super nanny. My babies loved her. They loved her just as much as I loved her. Really, I think if there was a maid or a nanny that I really considered part of my family and just one like a young sister, I think that was her. So she fell pregnant and she decided she wants to stop work. She wants to go and start a family with her boyfriend. And, you know, it just felt like any other experience, because at that point, you know, I had lost quite a number of nannies. Some of them just, you know, came, they saved some money and they wanted to go and do business. Some of them, it was just, you know, I miss home. I want to be with my family. I think I'll just find something near home or something like that. So it just felt like it's just one of those things that I need to get over, because I have experienced the loss of a nanny before. But I really didn't take into account how close I was to this girl. So, and even the time that I was grieving, I didn't know that I was grieving a loss. You know, it was only like months later that I actually realized. And, you know, I think the first time that I actually acknowledged it was to my hairdresser. I said, you know, the loss of that lady, you know, her departing really left me broken. And I know at that time my main focus was just trying to find a replacement for her, but I never took time to grieve that I had lost a relationship. Of course, from time to time, you know, she passes by, she calls me, but, you know, just having somebody part of your family and all of a sudden they're gone and they've gone to do their own thing away from you, it really left me limping. And at that point, I had no idea, you know, that I was actually grieving this person. I was filled with sadness, such sadness, that I just didn't know what to do with myself. Like, why do I feel like this? I was constantly drained. I was tired. I was moody. You know, I wanted to rest a lot, like maybe just sleep a lot. You know, I was not sociable. And I didn't know at that point that I was grieving, that person. Because I just didn't feel like, you know, how do you even grieve a person who's alive? You know? Only time, you know, told that I was actually grieving that person. And I think it actually happened with another friend of mine. But now she's late. We were in university together, and I don't know at what point really we fell off. And our friendship, it just started to deteriorate, and everything just felt like, you know, it was going to the dogs, and we're just drifting apart. And at some point, I felt like we tried to salvage the friendship, but it didn't work. So we just had to let it go. And, you know, you're young, it just feels like, you know what, I'm not going to plead for this person anymore and blah, blah, blah. But really, I suffered. And again, it only occurred to me years later that I actually grieved that person. Like, I experienced loss that I did not acknowledge at that time. And so these days I'm very mindful. I'm very mindful to myself. If I see that a relationship is no longer in the state that it had always used to be, I give myself time to actually just, you know, grieve or just process the fact that it's not the same and that, you know, things have changed and I need to move on and that I need to support myself through that phase, or if I need, you know, to reinforce support by talking to somebody else, I do that for myself. The third is loss of self. So, you know, when I feel like every maybe 3 to 5 years, I actually shed off. You know, I image as a different person. And of course, the times when I'm not imaged as my best. But, you know, I've imaged as a different person. And I think it happens to almost everyone. But I'm very sure, for myself at least. I know that the person that I was in my late teens is not the same person that I became around 22, 23. You know, I always say, you know, I miss how enterprising I was when I was somewhere 24, you know, 23, 24, 25. Those were my enterprising years. I was so hands-on, you know, I was chasing the bag, you know, all that thing. Now I'm like, you know, I'm so risk conscious. Like, it takes me time to make a decision, and sometimes I really get fatigued about trying to decide on something. But then I was really a go-getter, and there are times that I miss being that person who would throw caution to the wind and just chase after something that, you know, that I want. There's so much of my younger self that I think I mourn, and, you know, I never realized it. I used to post a lot about that on my status, and even in my journals, you know, when I'm journaling and I'm just writing, I would write a lot about that person that I was. And, you know, there was a time that I just really felt like, what happened to this person? How can I get this person back? And I think when I spoke to a friend, well, who's more like a mentor, really, she just said, you know what, that person is gone. That person carried you through a season, and their season came to an end. Now you need to be thinking about the person that you are and the person that you need to become. And if there are any attributes from the person that you were that you want to reintroduce, really, nothing is stopping you. You are the person who gets to decide that. But to say that you will get back the exact version of who you were when you were young, I think would be pushing it too far. And again, I never took time to really mourn myself, because I feel like, especially the previous version of who I was, you know, that soft girl, that naive girl, that self-giving girl, there's so much that I miss about her, you know, as compared to the person that I am now. Of course, I love who I am. There are benefits to being who I am right now, but also there's just so much from the person that I was before I experienced some, you know, life-changing situations, that I feel like, that was a very good part of myself. But anyway, I want to finish this podcast by this episode, sorry, by sharing what my fears were around grieving. Why was I afraid to grieve, or what were some of the stumbling blocks that were preventing me from really just grieving? So first things first, I feared to grieve because I felt like my pain was invalid. With my mom, of course, when you lose a mother, when you lose a parent, it's, you know, the pain is apparent. Everybody expects that you will grieve. But for a person who's true alive, for a friendship that has ended, you know, for an older version of yourself that you have outgrown, nobody really thinks that you should be grieving that. Like, it's part of life. It happens. So even to take time to really just sit down and grieve, it just felt like there's no pain there. Like, am I being overdramatic? So you really need to just assert yourself and validate your pain and, you know, get on and deal with it. Also, I feared to grieve because I feared the person I would become if I allowed myself to grieve. And I think this is very true about grieving my mom to the fullest. You know, there's just something about grief that really, really makes you vulnerable. Grief takes you to places within yourself that sometimes you're afraid of facing. Like, at least for myself, I felt like that. Like, if I do fall apart, you know, if I do open up this wave of emotion, what will become of me? What will I become? You know, will I be able to face myself? Sometimes it's the worry of, will the people around me really be able to contain me if I freely, you know, grieve and just open myself up and become vulnerable? Also, I feared to grieve because I didn't trust myself enough that I would be there for myself. You know, when you grieve, sometimes you want that support. But also, for a person like me who's very insecure about, oh, what would people say? Child, you know, do they have the capacity to support me properly? It means that you only have yourself, and sometimes you don't trust that you are able to support yourself through it. You know, at what point will I stop crying if I cry now? And if you're anything like me, really, oof, I cry. Like, I cry my lungs out when I mean to cry. I must sit there and I'm just like there for an hour and I'm just crying, you know, and I take breaks and I breathe a little, and then, you know, the wave of emotion comes again. So, you know, that kind of grief. Do I trust myself enough to be there for me, to comfort myself, to support myself through it? I fear to grieve because I didn't acknowledge the loss. Sometimes you don't know that you are experiencing loss, like the two last encounters I have shared with you. I didn't even know I was grieving, but, you know, I was literally, all the symptoms, all the signs were there of grief. But because it's not pain that you'd actually acknowledge and validate, it's like, what have I really lost? Especially the loss of self. Like, I'm still here. You know, I'm still me. I'm still in the same body. I feel like my spirit is the same. It's so difficult to ascertain what exactly you have lost. So You don't know that you have actually experienced loss. I felt like grieving was a waste of time. You know, like when you grieve, sometimes I don't know where you draw the line between grieving and self-pity. You know, like I'm an orphan now, like I don't got a mom, and you know, like at some point it's like, okay, yes, you've grieved, but at this point now it's, you know, self-pity. So for me, like I didn't want to feel like I'm spending too much time throwing myself a pity party. Like I know that I've lost this person, but no amount of crying is going to bring them back. And I just felt like, you know, at some point, actually, I think that's what really got me out of it, is, you know, she's not coming back. No, I really avoided going to her gravesite, because I just felt like, what am I going to be doing there? I felt like it was so hypocritical, you know, to be going there to do what exactly? You know, she's gone. She's not going to talk to me. She's not going to speak to me. She's not going to say anything to me. And I feel like the next time that I went to my, in fact, maybe the first time after the burial, I went there with a colleague. And I told him, we were attending a funeral for another colleague. He had just lost his brother. And we arrived early, so it was just me and him. And, you know, I said, you know, my mom is actually buried on the other side on Memorial Park. And he was like, really? Let's go and look at it. I'm like, why? And he said, you know, maybe you have a few things to say. I said, I don't have anything to say. You know, if there was anything that I needed to say, I think my mom and I had that relationship where, you know what, if there's something to say, you better say it. And for me, I always say it, what I needed to say. Of course, there are times when, you know, there was nothing to say, but there was just, you know, tension. But if anything needed to be said, I think we had a relationship secure enough to say what needed to be said. So I just felt like, I don't know what I'm even going to say. But he literally dragged me there, and I stood there, and I didn't have any words. But I also just felt numb, like, what am I supposed to be saying? So, yeah, like, at that point, I felt like I don't want to go back to, you know, where I'm coming from. I felt like I had moved past all that, you know, darkness and, you know, the hopelessness. And I didn't want to open that door again. I was so afraid of going there. So what are some of the things that helped me overcome this fear that got me to a place where I actually begin to grieve, or I actually acknowledge, or I get through a grieving process? So the first thing is I acknowledge my pain and loss, especially like for my nanny and for myself. I acknowledge that, you know, there's a part of me that has felt lost because I'm not the person that I used to be. And especially that I think the transition took place out of a crisis, not the fact that I was being intentional about changing and becoming this person and blah blah blah, blah. No, the person that I am today, I feel like was birthed out of a crisis. And of course, I at some point I had taken, you know, time to just be intentional about, okay, if things are going to change, this is how I want to be. But initially, in the initial stages, it was just, you know, there's a crisis, and the person that I am right now is not going to be able to take me through this crisis, so I need to change, you know. And I just started transforming and evolving and becoming. So first things first, acknowledge the pain, acknowledge the loss, acknowledge that you've lost something. Don't be proud. Secondly, I discovered and decided how I will process grief. So people grieve differently, you know, and even yourself, you're not going to have one grieving style. So you will grieve differently for different losses, is what I think I can say for myself. So, for example, part of how I process grief is actually to just talk to somebody. I feel like for me, when I talk, it helps me to process. So as I talk, I process better when I speak it out, unlike when it's just roaming in my mind. So when I speak out the words, I begin to process, because then I'm able to hear them myself, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm tripping, or yes, okay, that is valid, or no, that is supposed to be a temporary situation, don't make a permanent decision based on a temporary situation, kind of thing. So Also, I cry a lot. I don't cry every day, but when I do decide to cry, I literally make time, you guys, to cry. Like if I'm experiencing something and I'm not too overwhelmed, I literally say, you know what, at the end of the day, maybe I'll get home, maybe I'll just tell the kids I need some time and I'll just cry. Sometimes I'll take a long shower and just cry. I think the last time that I was so overwhelmed with emotion, I literally cried on my way home. I don't even want to get into what that was, but literally I cried the whole day in the office. I cried on my way home. I remember there were some guys that were just hooting at me and just asking me to lower my window. Are you okay? I could hear them like mouthing it out, like, are you okay? You know, you keep crying, like we're stuck in traffic, so you know. But yeah, I love to cry. I feel like once I have cried, I actually have space to breathe and think and process. So also I just go through moments where I just allow myself to feel the pain. You know, nobody wants to feel pain. You know, nobody wants to feel sadness. Nobody wants to go through grief. But the truth of the matter is, especially now that I view emotions more as indicators, you know, than objects or, you know, actual life experiences. Like, if I'm feeling sad, it's an indication that there's something that I'm supposed to be addressing. If I'm feeling grief, it's an indication that I've actually lost something. So I normally just take time to allow myself to actually experience the pain, experience the emotion, but also just observe the emotion. Do not become it. Do not become sadness. I think in the past, I was this person who would literally embody my emotions. If I am sad, I'm not only sad on my face, I'm sad in the way even my energy is sad. You will walk into my space and you will feel that I am sad or that I am depressed. These days I try not to embody my emotions. I just experience them, I observe them, and I allow myself to let them go. Number three, make time to grieve. Pay attention to your mind. You know, I pay attention to my mind and my heart and do what is necessary. If at that point I am overwhelmed and I need to cry, I literally cry. If at that point I'm too overwhelmed, I feel sad, or I'm having challenges processing something, I normally cut myself off from the rest of the world. You know, I give myself space to just be with myself and just take time to really process, because sometimes it's so difficult trying to process emotions or to grieve in the presence of other people. And I think I'm one such person. I've never really been comfortable with processing emotion in front of everyone, unless otherwise it's an emotional outburst where, you know, I can't contain it, then yes. But otherwise, majority of the times, I'm one who really just, I think my response to being overwhelmed with emotion is just shutting down, especially like if it is sadness, I'm upset, I'm angry, normally I shut down, I incubate. Of course, there's a downside to that, especially if you're just going to incubate the pain and the anger and the sadness and you're not going to do anything about it and you're not, you know, actively processing it. It's very, very dangerous. But I was that kind of a person. But even now, really, I just shut down. I take time to like grieve, but also during that time I just process and I allow myself to feel, process, and then I also take time to just let it go. Number four, I have learned to trust myself to be there for myself, to support me and do what is necessary to get through a given situation, especially when I don't feel vulnerable enough to talk to other people about it. You know, I speak to myself, I affirm myself, I assert myself. You know, I literally just go through a process. It's these days when I think of how I support myself, really, I'm even amazed myself. So I have an old picture of myself when I was young. And every time that I'm going through something, I think if older me needs to support this young girl, because I believe that all of us have an inner child. And sometimes when our wounds surface, really, it's the inner child that was wounded or that is experiencing that wound that we need to be focusing more on. So I literally do everything that is necessary to be able to support myself. I literally ask myself, what do I need to feel better? in this situation. And you know, sometimes it's just food. Like, yeah, please don't judge me. I love food, comfort food. So yes, I will go and get myself food. You know, I know it's a temporal solution, but you know, it makes me feel better. It helps me, you know, get a step ahead in processing my grief, in processing my emotions. So I literally do that for myself. If I need to go for a massage, if I need to watch a movie, if I need to sleep, if I need to cry, I pay attention to myself and I just allow myself to do what I need to do to get over, you know, whatever it is, or get through whatever it is that I am experiencing. I become my own support system, and I think that is something that I am very, very proud of, because sometimes everybody else is going through their own, you know, hullabaloo. You just can't always expect that people are going to drop their lives to come to you. I mean, it would absolutely be perfect and really nice if they could, but if they can't, you need to have your back. You know, you need to have yourself. You need to know that you're able to support yourself to get through what you are grieving, or, you know, experiencing the loss that you have just, you know, gotten into. So yeah, that's my story about, you know, loss and grief. I hope that, you know, some of the tactics or some of the pointers, tips that I have shared towards the end are going to be very helpful with you. Please do not hesitate to give me feedback. So this is episode 2 of season 2, and you're going to be hearing it today on Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Till next month, happy living. Be as bright as you can be, you beautiful diamond.